My name is Ashley, and this is An Album a Day, an English language podcast promoting commentary on South Korean pop music. This podcast covers mainstream, indie, and some underground artists within the scene and provides both factual and opinionated K-pop commentary. The biggest benefit to sharing my thoughts this way is that it will hopefully expose you to more great music and exploration of your own. Hey, y'all. On February 8th, I finally went back home to my second home. No, I'm not talking about Detroit. Detroit, Michigan is technically my second home, but really my first because that's where I was raised, even though I live in Houston and that's where I was born. I went much further. And you can probably hear like the delivery cars outside right now, or the motorcycles, but ultimately it's usually quiet. But I went back home. My husband surprised me with sending me back to South Korea for a couple of days, just a couple of days. I don't have a very busy schedule, and I have a cough drop in my mouth right now, so kind of just work with me. But he sent me back, and one of the things I had to do was go to the K-pop museum. And we talked about this a few weeks before I actually went. I had no idea I was going. I genuinely mean that. But we talked about it in a past episode. I did a Twitter Spaces, the first one I did under the A3 Day moniker. It's been quite some time since I've done another one, actually. But I was talking about how the museum opened once I left, and I said eventually I'd go to see it, and I did. So the K-pop museum, it's fan-curated, fan-owned, and it's located in Gyeongju, South Korea. That's G-Y-E-O-N-G-J-U. Gyeongju, and it's in the province of Gyeongsangbuk-do. And the really cool thing about this is I went in thinking it was going to be curated a certain way. The only part that I feel is heavily and intentionally curated is to take you to the origins of what K-pop is and how pop music evolved. There is an area called the 100-Year History of Korean Pop Music Exhibition, which takes place on the second floor. So you go up the stairs of this place, and this museum exterior is insane. It looks like a big guitar and a record on the outside. But you get in there, and there's a coffee shop to the left and an auditorium, which I was unprepared for the emotional reaction I was going to have when I went in there. But you go to the second floor, you go up the stairs after check-in, and they have lockers there for you to be able to store your things complimentary. And you ascend these stairs, and there's just images all over of recent K-pop, the album covers of things that I love and know personally. There's 21's album, there's Tiara, there's EXO when it was still 12 of them, Controversy notwithstanding, Infinite, oh God, it was so much stuff. SHINee, Wonder Girls, 4 Minutes, What's My Name, TVXQ, Don't Stop, Can't Stop, 2PM, like it's just After School. It was it was so much. It was so much. And they give you that first moment of, hey, foreigners, you're more than likely here for this reason, but let's educate you. Let's put you into the correct perspective of what it is that you're going to be learning about. And it's the roots of all of this. Music doesn't just come from out of nowhere. There's always some motivation behind it, some of which might not be immediately understood, but there's always a motivating factor behind it, be it that you just want to express your creativity, or it's dire necessity for battle cries or a celebration of being saved or anything of that sort. Music historically has always been available. And they took a lot of care in making sure that visitors were aware of that. Most of the text was heavily in Korean, rightfully so. It is their museum. But the text that was available takes you all the way back to like 1897, the social background of the dawning of Korea popular music. So K-pop is not a genre, although we like to argue that back and forth quite a bit these days. And perhaps to some extent, it's a little debatable. But by this, they are talking about an era where there was still an empire. So let me give you a little bit of context to this. Right quick, I am quoting this from the museum, from images that I took. In 1897, King Gojong renamed the nation as the Korean Empire and adopted autocracy. Later in 1905, the Korean Empire was deprived of its diplomatic rights by the humiliating Japan-Korea Protectorate Treaty. Now, end quote, sorry. You do have an awareness of the frictions that are not 100% ironed out between these two nations, but I don't think there's much that could be mentioned without acknowledging them at this juncture in time. So we're going to move a little bit further into this. Quote, Columbia Records released the first commercial music record. Victor Records also released a music record in 1908. In August 1910, Emperor Sunjong, the last emperor of the Korean Empire, announced an imperial mandate abdicating his throne in favor of the Emperor of Japan through Japanese annexation of Korea. After Japanese annexation of Korea in 1910, a 10-inch phonograph record containing folk songs and traditional music pieces of Korea was released by Royal Record Nippon Phone of Japan. This record was gradually sold with phonographs to the wealthy class, end quote. So the reason you can't escape mentioning Japan is there would not have been a spreading of folk music without them having a hand involved. That might not be the thing that they hope to acknowledge in terms of their history, but history is undeniable. And when you want to tell the truth about it, you have to acknowledge where it came from. Moving a little bit further into it, like 1894, year of the 31st King Gojong, there was a song called Bluebird, and that made a really big impact on the Joseon-do towards the end of Joseon Dynasty. So all of these songs, and this was the first folk song that was sung in 1894 in the middle of all of these difficulty things going on, there was always a passion for being able to have something that unified everybody. Many years later, Adidong, which is a folk song, but can be popularized by trot and other things, that became a song of unity as well. And then you just go through the museum and you're looking at all of this stuff preserved from 1896 on out. It's overwhelming to see musical history when music is one of your greatest passions. The beginning of Korean popular music had men and women heavily involved, but some of it was just to be able to get out folk music and be able to share those aspects of who they are and what they are. Then there was a massive shift when the United States became a presence in South Korea and brought our music. That's not to say other countries didn't have music, but they had a huge influence on the music and stylings that followed thereafter. The fashions, even. I'm looking at an image right now of an album cover of someone who is Korean, but there is Japanese and perhaps some Chinese characters on the front of the cover of this album. And this is in 1959 on King Star Record. Lovely, beautiful woman standing in front of the Seoul train station, the original building, which if you've been to Seoul, you see the new building adjacent to the original. And these albums were influenced by, inspired by a lot of American artists. There was a time where Nat King Cole's hit songs, that's the name of the album. It says Nat King Cole, hit song, songs by Nat King Cole. And it's in English, Japanese, and in Korean, eventually made its way across the ocean over there and encouraged and inspired balladeers. You have a lot of trios and soloists that made some huge moments. And when you get further into that second floor, you start to see where fans started to provide whatever they had. There was a cover done in like 1964 by In Sung-yi. And if you don't know who In Sung-yi is, eventually at some point historically, we got to get to her because she's phenomenal. But she's got a cover where she's in a wet t-shirt. And I don't think she got on any underwear underneath that. And her hair is short, straight to her skull, just like how we wear it now when you see a lot of women with their natural curls, because I'm not going to give it away. Y'all just need to either Google her or just wait until we start talking about who she is. Just seeing that stuff and knowing that influences from rock and roll and whatnot were evident in the way that they dressed, and the way that the music was produced, it was really, really cool. Yes, there were certainly moments where I saw things of the point in time where I got into this. I saw the marker that identified the impact of Psy and Gangnam Style and how huge that was. And of course, there was things for BTS, but there was a lot of stuff for a lot of girl groups and soloists. So that made me very excited. As a Starlight, a fan of VIX, they had a section as well. And I'm like, I couldn't believe they got such a huge section of acknowledgement, but that's what their fans wanted to cultivate. Then you go further up into the facility and you see all of these classic old radios. I mean, original RCA things and all of these innovative speakers and sound systems from decades gone by. I even saw an original Tesla. Just processing that memory right now. Not so much the thing of it being Tesla, but the magic of the speakers that are there. There's a particular set that there's only a handful that were made to begin with, and this is the last one in the world. And the man who owns the museum took the time and refurbished it and prepared it to be used again. And you can request any song, doesn't matter the language or anything, and be able to listen to it through those speakers, over 100-year-old speakers, and be able to connect to the music. And I was moved beyond words. I wasn't too thrilled about the song they initially picked, but those weren't the only classic speakers that were there. So I got to hear that on the third floor and kind of drool over all of the speakers all around. And then I went back downstairs and I thanked the young lady who was at the front desk, who, she speaks English, but she spoke Korean with me and was very patient while my brain struggled to translate things. And I sat down and they were playing Do You Want to Build a Snowman in that little auditorium. And the auditorium is just lined from floor to ceiling with records, and it smelled like thyme, and it smelled like warmth and felt like warmth. And you're listening to the song Do You Want to Build a Snowman, and I technically don't want to at all, but I was overwhelmed by the purity of the sound that it just thinking about it now is choking me up. It choked me up. There was a point, and I mean, we're doing better now, but there was a point where my hearing was in jeopardy. So to hear something so crisp and pure, it moved my soul. And it was a very worthwhile experience. I did get to go back to Daegu. And getting there, I was bowled over by my reaction. Like, I know how important the experience of being there was for me, but I didn't realize I missed it as much as I've, far more than I realized. And I got off the train and I felt like my heart would burst. But this, yeah, they could have kept my heart. I cannot wait to go back. I have so many pictures I can't wait to share with you all. And just a lot to be able to make additional content about, to teach you more about the amazing music of this small country. K-pop is an experience, don't get me wrong, but if you really want to appreciate something, then you have to learn the history of it. You have to know where it came from to see where it is now and where it's heading, and to take care of it. And their music history is very much my music history as an American. And it's everyone's music history as a consumer. You're going to hear influences from all over the world in K-pop. Sometimes it's on purpose, sometimes it's stolen, sometimes it's by accident. But it still is an awesome thing. And that's ultimately what I want to say. I didn't have a lot, but I wanted to share that with y'all. And maybe it puts a smile on your face to hear me talk about this. Will you go and check this museum out if you ever get the chance? If you do, I'll go with you. Bye, y'all.
Season 7 of An Album a Day, a review of every album in K-pop, is hosted by Ashley, with media research provided by AJ and podcast production and editing by Carolyn Hines. Special shout out to my Patreon supporters, the freshmen, student body, the scholars, and the staff who keep my vision of becoming your favorite foreign Korean music historian exploring all the industry from A to Z a real thing. Check out this episode's show notes to connect with me on social media and learn more about becoming a sponsor on Patreon.
Tell other K-pop fans and you enjoy this podcast by leaving a few stars or a review on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you for listening, and I'll catch you in the next episode.